I don't know. Think pinkgradio.com, right?
Can you hear me, Rick?
Yes, I can hear you now. Who is it?
It's Eric.
Eric? Which Eric?
I can't tell if you're being serious.
I am serious. I don't know who this is.
What?
I am in the hospital.
Why?
My mother. That's why I'm here in Mexico.
Stop it.
And the doctor is here right now, so I really have to go.
Is this Ruth?
Who?
Ruth.
I don't know.
Oh my God. Did you just play a joke on me?
Who's playing a joke on you?
I just called what I thought was your number, but it wasn't. Oh my God, I feel so weird right now.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, my mother is not in the hospital. It wasn't me. I'm not playing a trick on you.
Okay.
Okay, John?
The songs that we're going to hear on this week's podcast are The Geeks Were Right by The Faint. I was at the Raven Festival, and I walked by the You Are Chicago table. I was just, like, trying to make some conversation with them, and randomly, the page I turned to was an article written about gay marriage by Jenny Lezak for You Are Chicago.
Good old Jenny. I miss Jenny. I miss seeing her face. They had the intro for Women on Women. I actually haven't listened to it in a while.
We should pop in on their show.
They were just, like, random people who writes articles for You Are Chicago?
Actually, neither of them were writers. It seemed like they were both behind-the-scenes types.
Ah.
for the magazine.
They sounded very young with your big microphone saying that gay people are the coolest.
I think I was really caffeinated because I was just so like, bah, bah, bah. Like,
you know, yeah, how I feel.
What do you mean?
This is why I scare people, because I'm always highly caffeinated. Hi, 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 can I be a hi?
So you do the marketing,
mm-hmm.
and you do the what?
Operations, like bookkeeping and stuff like that. The exciting stuff.
The exciting stuff. So what's up with this out of the closet issue?
Have you flipped through it yet?
Definitely. I know. I have.
Oh, yeah? Are you a lesbian?
No.
Are you gay?
No.
Do you know any gay people?
Yep.
I hope it shows that it's a magazine for everybody. I don't know, like, if it's particularly revolutionary.
We have a monthly column in here.
You guys are out.
Yeah, you are out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this one. I'm straight, and I've been to a bunch of drag shows.
Where?
Hydrate. I used to work for Hydrate, so.
Oh, what do you think of drag shows at Hydrate?
I think they're fine. It's definitely lip sync you while you drink. But that's the only type I've ever been to.
Right, so. And that sucks, because there's some fierce drag queens that make awesome art. You know, we don't have to get too, gay marriage. I feel like I met in the last like 2 years like an influx of gay couples getting married. Do you guys know any?
No.
Okay. What about you?
No, I've heard like friends through friends, but I don't personally know any.
Oh, okay. So then this article. Hey Mary, gay marriage isn't legal in Illinois, but LGBT couples aren't waiting for the green light. Oh, that's by Jennifer Lezak, who works for Chirp.
All right.
And she hosts the Women on Women music program on WLUW, and she loves the gays. So, do you guys love the gays?
What's not to love? I suppose is a better answer to that question.
Oh, I could answer that question. Do you guys go to gay bars?
Yes, I do.
Where do you go?
Well, actually, the one gay bar I frequent most often with my friends is the Granville Anvil, because it's right by my house.
Oh my god, I love the Anvil.
Yeah.
Where do you go?
I haven't been to one in a while, but I've been to most of the Boys Town Strip.
Oh yeah?
Hydrate, Roscoe's, Sidetrack.
Does it make you uncomfortable when men check you out?
No.
What do you do?
Typically, they don't approach me.
Oh.
So.
I would.
Would you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What goes on at the Anvil?
The crowd's a lot older, generally, so they get really excited. Like, they see a bunch of, like, young 20-somethings come in. Golden Girls and porn on the TV. Bad jukebox.
That's fun.
A lot of old dudes.
Yeah.
Pretty killer mustaches. There's this one guy at the Granville Anvil who, I don't know, I think he was a few fries short of a Happy Meal, so to speak, and he would just come up to me and all my friends and just growl, like purr almost suggestively. He wouldn't talk, he wouldn't, he'd just be like, "Arr."
Can you make that growl sound for me again?
No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
Go, go. Was it like, "Grr"?
No, it was like.
More like, "Meow."
Like that, creepy.
Awesome. This is UR Chicago Magazine. We're at the Raven Festival on Saturday, August 16th. And the August issue of UR Chicago, Out of the Closet. All about us, I guess. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
The interview with Sharon Green from the Neo-Futurists and the writer of Fake Lake was really long. So I think it's going to be like part one of interview with Sharon Green.
There's one moment especially where, you know, he asked the question, why do women look so different wet and dry, dressed and undressed? They get smaller like cats. And, you know, at one point I had to look at Luke Hatton, the amazing and powerful actor who does me the honor of playing that role, and say, I mean, you might as well think about it this way. I am also a person who sleeps with women, and I have had that thought.
I'm at Winnemac Park with Sharon Green, neo-futurist and playwright.
right?
Correct. The New Futurists are an ensemble of writer, director, performers. And I think one of the things that's really neat about the ensemble is it draws from all those disciplines. You do audition to get into our company. We're in our 20th year. We have people come through the door who are primarily writers, who still have to be good performers and wonderful to watch, but they can be very quirky, interesting people. They don't have to adhere to any sort of beauty standard or particular set of physical skills beyond a willingness to commit their full selves to performing in other people's work, just as we commit to performing theirs. Part of what we do is bend and break the rules of conventional theater, and you have to be interested in doing that. Being in Too Much Light, particularly, and being in the New Futurists in general, has been an artist's dream, a growth experience for me. Plays that go into Too Much Light can be changed from week to week until they are your vision as you'd like it fulfilled. So, I mean, I think Chicago's ensemble theater scene is the strongest in the nation, and that the Neo-Futurists are just one of many ways of running an ensemble that supports, you know, its members to be their own best artist and grow to their own next artistic level. Chicago has a unique mix of more affordable living lifestyle than, say, some of our coastal cities. More affordable space, cooler, undeveloped raw space that a lot of the city's theater companies play in. And I won't say an anti-commercial attitude, but commerciality of theater is certainly not the primary thrust of most of the city's made artwork, live performance artwork. And it lets growing artists grow their work in low-budget ways. You know, it's very hard to take risks if thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars are on the line.
Do you think the Neo-Futurium has aspirations for something else ever? Or do you think its worth is more than the space at this point in time?
Well, I definitely think its worth is much more than the space. Are we ever going to be Steppenwolf, you know, something that has become an institution and a well-respected one that does, you know, amazing new things in its own genre? I don't know. I can tell you that the Neo-Futurists aspire as a group to always be breaking their own mold and doing new things. I can tell you one thing that is really exciting is that we're touring more and more. We're going to more places. And what we make feels really established here in Chicago, but in other parts of the country, what we're making is still kind of mind-blowing. The message of Neo-Futurism is the medium, which is that it's not expensive and it doesn't look that hard. Everyone can and should express themselves totally freely. We operate without censorship, and we put no barrier of money between us and the theater we want to make. They just can't stop us if it doesn't cost too much to make and we're producing it ourselves. And so can you, and so can you, is sort of the message of this show. And when we take it other places, people really hear that. And especially in the last few years where it's felt like freedom of expression has been, you know, curtailed or problematic, and we don't know what's to come.
What number in succession of full lengths is Fake Lake for you?
Well, you know, every playwright has a drawer full of unproduced full-length plays, so it's hard to know where to count from. Often being a performer, you make beautiful, wonderful things, and you work very hard to make those things, and then when the show closes, they're gone. One of the strange things about rehearsing in swimming pools and in other non-traditional spaces is that it was kind of hard to get small audiences of people in just to try it out, to see. And so for us, that Thursday night of our first preview was the very first time we'd really had an audience of any size, and it really feeds all this energy to the cast. But it's true, swimming, and swimming for the 4 to 6 hours that we would rehearse at a time, does make you incredibly fit and incredibly tired, like children, and incredibly hungry, like you remember from pools in the summertime. And I knew I wanted to combine the story of my own sort of disastrous trip to this place as a very young and confused person with the story of the place itself. And the challenge of that is always, how do you make a lot of historical information entertaining? And I began to work with a lot of water metaphors, and the combination of what happens in the story and those metaphors made it clear to me only into the writing process that it didn't need to just be near the water. it needed to be in the water. I needed to put this play in the pool. We needed to actually be able to play pool games like Marco Polo, or do real synchronized swimming, do real diving and jumping, and all the things that you see in the play now.
I wish I knew how to swim. I don't know how to swim.
You don't know how to swim?
No. See, every time I go to the beach, it's always just my feet. Splash, splash, splash.
Well, how come you've never learned how to swim?
I had a really bad experience when I was little. I was taking swimming lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to impress my instructor before he got there. So I went to the deep end. I was just, like, struggling real hard, like, pedaling. And then he was standing right there, and he looked at me straight in the eye and said, "Don't you ever do that again." I felt like I was in a really bad dream, you know? I was just, like, paddling.
Well, that's so weird that you did it well, and he told you not to do that ever again.
Yeah, he was cruel. He was a cruel man.
And now you don't know how to swim as an adult.
You know, maybe we can do, the podcast in, like, swimming. You know?
Yeah, on location.
Here we are at Steamworks.
And then part two of Sharon Green.
Say that the events are not embellished in any way, but that I don't have a perfect memory for dialogue. So all the writing is mine. Everything everyone says, I made up, but it is all taken from the truth of the action and behavior. In the play, I'm a narrator now. I'm not pretending to be a different person or a different age that I am, but I also sort of step back into the story as who I was then. The narrator now gets to know everything all at once at the beginning. And so, for instance, you learn very early in the play that part of why I was invited on this trip was a bet. And of course, the assumption was, even if he did ask me to go, no self-respecting young woman would say yes to go camping with a group of total strangers. The play is, I hope, about many things, but in part about the sort of fog of youth, this moment in your life where you're willing to do almost anything just to find out if it's the sort of thing that you will do. I didn't have a blinding moment of clarity when I knew I was gay. I didn't have a blinding moment of clarity when I knew I wanted to make theater or do anything else with my life. I had to hack my identity out of, you know, the field of possibilities. It was important to make a play where I was out, where I was truthful about who I am now and who I was then. But also, that's not really the focus of the play. It's certainly not about being gay or coming out. And so I tried to place it in the play in a way that makes it important and funny. You know, I yell, "I'm a dyke," really loud, kind of, so that everyone is really clear that I'm not hiding and I'm not ashamed, but that's not actually what the story's about. It's only one of the many factors contributing to the horrible awkwardness and sexual tension that pervades this entire weird trip. You know, once we've come out, we often revise all our stories to show how we knew when we were seven that we were gay. And some people do, and that's terrific. But actually, my lived experience and the lived experience of a lot of my friends was that we didn't know what the hell was going on. To me, that is more what the play is about, that this kind of gay experience that I think that we're more allowed to discuss now than maybe we were in previous generations, where we had to fight very brutally and more vigilantly the hatred. So it was easiest to be clear, we are gay, we are here. It's immutable, it's always been, it's genetic. And I don't disbelieve any of these things, so only that it's not my experience. My experience was more complex than that, and I think it's time to start talking about that. I do think culture is evolving really fast. Something Too Much Light has taught me, and I think over the years, the other many queer members of Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, is that we have had, for 20 years in the company, an incredible luxury of writing plays where we're out and gay, but also writing lots of plays where it's not about that at all, where we can be any other portion of our artistic sensibility or political stance or cultural view can also come out. and then the plays are randomly collaged together. So when we come out is different every night and can happen either very early or very late. It can change the room a lot, even now, certainly when we tour to high schools. One of the messages you get is that we will be in these shows, part of these sort of, we hope, smart, funny, cool people who've come to your school to do something awesome and get you out of class, and people are clapping and cheering, and often we're in very rural Midwestern places, and all of a sudden the play will hit where he or I is outed, or outs ourself, and the whole room can change, and the way they have to interact with that now is, 30 seconds ago, I thought these people were smart and funny and cool and the best thing that had happened to my day. Now I see not only is one of them gay, but the rest of them are clearly sort of best friends and tour buddies with that person. So it's not just, even if your instinct is to hate that one person, you have to deal with the reality that it's clear that all these other people work together to make this show. I feel so privileged and happy that my work doesn't have to be about being gay. And it's true that a lot of my work isn't. But I actually take my responsibility to be out at all times very seriously still. And maybe there'll come a moment where that's not important. But how I feel is that if my work moves you, and if my work connects with you, even if it's not about being gay, but then you can have access to the knowledge that I'm a queer person, I live out, I have a wife, I have a life that is comprised of, you know, happiness and normalcy in some way. that's powerful. That's world changing in the way that we don't think of as activism, but maybe in the way that we're growing to know that the world really works, is that when you start to live with people who are different than yourselves, you discover how they're not so different than yourself. I do feel a little post-queer. It's certainly not what my whole life is about, and certainly not what my whole art practice is about. But I still drop it into everything I do. Fake Lake is the opening show of the Neo-Futurist 20th anniversary season. We run from now through September 19th at the Wells Park Swimming Pool, right in the pool in the Wells Park Fieldhouse at the corner of Sunnyside and Lincoln. Tickets are $15, $10 for students and seniors, and every Thursday night's performance is pay what you can. Come on by and get a little wet with us.
I also wanted to play this artist that I just discovered today. Her name is Janelle Monae, and she has a history with CeeLo and Outkast, and she's putting out a series of EPs called Metropolis, and the new one came out this month. It's called Metropolis Suite 1. I think it's going to be hot.
closet drunk, bathtub, outcast, weirdo, stepchild, freak show, black girl, bad hair, broad nose, cold stare, tap shoes, Broadway, tuxedo, holiday, creative block, love song, stupid words, erase song, gunshots, orange house, dead man walk with the dirty mouth, spoiled milk, stale bread, welfare, bubonic plague, record deal, light bulb, you keep back hit down corporate fuck, breast cancer, common cold, HIV, lost hope, overweight, self-esteem, misfit, broken dream, fish tank, small roll, close-minded, dark hole, cyber girl, joy control, get away now, trying to steal your soul, microphone, one stage, tomboy, outrage, street fight, bloody war, instigators, third floor, promiscuous child, broken heart, STD, quarantine, heroin users, cokehead, final chapter, deathbed, plastic sweats, metal skin, metallic tears, mannequin, carefree, nightclub, closet drunk, bathtub, White House, Jim Crow, dirty lies, are my regards.
Yeah.
You know how to swim.
Yes.
Do you, like, know everything, like backstroke, butterfly?
Yeah, when I was young, my dad made me take swimming lessons at the local YMCA.
Okay.
I did learn how to swim, but another thing that I learned was that I didn't like being naked in the locker room, which I still don't like.
Well, you need to go to therapy for that, because everyone likes that.